Gang, we all know that a premium Spotify subscription gives you access to millions of songs and thousands of podcasts, but did you know that a premium Spotify subscription also gets you access to tons of audiobooks for free? It does, gang. Listen to great books like Storyteller, the Dave Grohl memoir, or Life by Keith Richards, or The Woman in Me by Britney Spears. Listen, there's all kinds of books on there. There's fiction, nonfiction, self-help, anything you're looking for, man, they got it, and you can listen to it for free. Just go to Spotify.com or download Spotify from your app store and start listening today. That's Spotify. Millions of songs, thousands of podcasts, and now audiobooks available with your premium subscription. Spotify.com. Let's get down. What are they saying on How Did I Get Here?
When I met Seal, he was in the cracks. He just came off the heels of having that hit with Adamski.
We just stood off to the side and watched the puppets, okay, you know, mime to our playing, okay, right, and sing.
I'm a fucking crazy bitch. I drink like a poor person.
It was anarchy.
She goes, I very much enjoyed your program, but tell me, can you play that song, Redneck Mother?
And I kind of, like, I always, like, flourish in awkward situations. So I've somewhat enjoyed all of this.
Yeah.
And if everybody wants to get on the whole Bible thing, it's like, hey, go read it.
It was never a big deal here to be a girl.
He was a special, special being, for sure.
Because I'm the first female Hispanic to make it on the country Billboard charts.
Really?
It's just kind of trying to not be afraid to be out there anymore.
Then they'd move all the furniture and fire up the hi-fi with Ray Price and drink and party and dance in the living room all night on the weekends.
Sometimes I wonder, I'm like, where is this going? Whatever, just keep going, you'll find out later.
I was banned from going to shows when I was like younger because my parents hate rock and roll.
And then I had, you know, really intense anxiety, just general anxiety.
It's so intelligent. It's like the best music history and just music lesson you'll ever get in your life.
That's How Did I Get Here with me, Johnny Gowdy. Available wherever it is you stream or download your podcasts. Let's get down.
You gotta open the vault.
Open my vault?
Open your vault.
Once I open the vault, it ceases to be a vault.
You have no choice.
Hey, the vault.
I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to another episode of How Did I Get Here from the Vault, where we reach back into our vault of well over 1,000 episodes, pull one out, shine it up, and re-release it for you, just in case you missed it or in case you want to hear it again. In the spirit of South by Southwest, gang, today we're going back to episode 576 from March of 2017 with Aaron Behrens and Jonas Wilson from The Midnight Stroll. This was recorded live from the South by Southwest podcast stage presented by TuneIn. It was in a hotel. It was really, really great. It was, man. Aaron Behrens, of course, you know him from Ghostland Observatory. Jonas Wilson and I go back many, many years, over 20 years. We played together back in 2001, 2002 in my old band Gowdy when he was yet a young pup. And then we made a record together called El Payaso, Johnny Gowdy and the Little Champions. Jonas is a very, very talented songwriter, musician, singer, multi-instrumentalist, a great engineer, a great producer, and Aaron Behrens, of course, a great songwriter and musician and singer from the great band Ghostland Observatory. They joined forces back in like 2014 or 2015 or something and started this band, The Midnight Stroll. And I asked them basically back in 2017 when I was invited to do a live podcast at the South by Southwest live podcast stage presented by TuneIn. I tried to think of people that would be able to be there because this thing was like at 10 in the morning. So I wanted to make sure that I could count on somebody. And Jonas and Aaron are incredibly dependable. They're my friends. I knew they'd do really well there in the morning. And lo and behold, they did. We had a great conversation about all kinds of stuff. All kinds of stuff. Like, their unique live show, the way that they were performing with tape machines and stuff, their writing and recording process, living out in the country, art versus commerce, Bugaloo versus Boogaloo, and the album Mohawk Boogaloo that they were releasing at the time back in 2017. So without further ado, gang, let's go back to March 21st, 2017, episode 576, The Midnight Stroll, live from the South by Southwest podcast stage, presented by TuneIn. Let's get down.
How did I get here? From the vault.
Thank you for joining us at South by Southwest, the TuneIn podcast stage. It's what some in the music business would call early in the morning.
Yes.
11 a.m. Are you an early riser, Aaron?
I have to be. My children pull me out of bed every morning about 6:37, no matter what time I went to bed the night before.
Right.
So, yeah, I have to be.
Okay. Is that tough?
Oh, yeah, but I, you know, my oldest is 13, so you got to think I've been doing it for years, bro. It's pro-level stuff.
You're
now.
Second, next level.
Yeah.
Next level parenting and waking up early. Jonas, are you an early riser? This podcast gets a lot better, and I ask much better questions. I just like to warm up in a nice way.
I am an early riser just because my wife wakes up early and goes to work, you know, and so I get up and I'm at the studio a couple hours later kind of thing, so...
Yeah, at the Skeleton Farm.
That's
where
right.
All things are happening. Your latest album, well, the original one, Heartbreak Boogaloo,
yes.
Which set off the Boogaloo sensation, which spawned off two other spin-offs.
Yeah. There is weird Boogaloo things popping up now since
it's
we did
great.
That. It's funny.
That came out, I mean, you guys have released, you've had three releases in like a half a year, basically.
Yeah.
Like since June.
We just had a live acoustic record.
Which is fantastic, recorded at the Mohawk, and I was at that show, right?
Yes,
yeah,
you were.
Show I was out? Yeah.
Yes, yeah. You were.
It was recorded on the stage.
On the stage. How?
Straight to tape.
Let's talk about this. For those of you that are here, this is Jonas Wilson and Aaron Behrens. They have a band called The Midnight Stroll. Absolutely fantastic band. One of the great bands around right now.
Wow.
And you guys did a residency at the Mohawk. And that was, I can't even remember what night it was, Wednesdays?
Every Wednesday.
Wednesdays.
Yep. In February.
When you set out to do, what, like, why did you do a residency? For, you know what I mean? Like, there's different, sometimes people go to work out new tunes, sometimes they're working out their shows, sometimes they just want to play.
Well, I think it was because Austin, they asked us to do it.
Yeah.
And then we had to come up with a why we would do it, and so for... I had a kooky idea and just told Aaron, like, well, let's just change the genre every week of the band and I'll reinvent our songs in different genres every week. So that's what we did. Every week was a different genre. I did, like, an electronic version of all the Midnight Stroll stuff and then rock versions. And then we did... Everything was different, you know. We made new versions of everything. It was very fun and tiring.
And so the last one, the one that I saw, was the acoustic version.
The last one you saw was the acoustic night, totally.
So, all right, let's go back to this. We'll talk about some other stuff first, but let's talk about like the evolution of the Midnight Stroll. When I first met you, Aaron, you had put out the Aaron Behrens and the Midnight Stroll album, mm-hmm. which, by the way, is different.
Yeah.
Than the current Midnight Stroll. And you guys had a full band at the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's a video you can see at themidnightstroll.com where you guys are doing a full band thing. There's one.
Yes.
And the rest of them are all kind of how you guys... So, talk about the evolution. When you started out, was it more of your solo project that Jonas was producing?
Yeah, because it was, I mean, coming from Ghostland world, you know, I was like trying to find my footing outside of the raves.
Yeah.
You know, trying to find who in the hell am I outside of a rave? And so, you know, I'm a country boy at heart, coming from San Seba, Texas, so...
The way you talk about chickens and snakes and like looking a chicken in the eye, which is something I've never heard.
Gotta look that chicken in the eye, boy.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, but it is, dude, and it's something that's in my blood. So, you know, I was just trying to find my footing because I've always written songs on acoustic guitar, and then when I got into Ghostland, we were doing, you know, electronic craziness, and I was a madman running around stage the whole time. So after getting out of that, trying to find my footing, writing all these songs... Fortunately, I I'd asked actually Ricky Ray Jackson, and he had told me to call Jonas, and then Jonas, you know, got on the horn with him, and we brought up old flames because he used to practice. Lomita used to practice across from Ghostland at the music lab.
So you were a big fan of Lomita.
Oh, yeah.
I was
no.
Too.
They played the Paparazzi Lightning album release party at the Ritz.
At the Ritz.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, back in the Dizzy. So we just hit it off, man. And it was night after night and then playing on tour with the full band and everything. And Jonas and I just kept coming back together and being like, it eventually just became, how can we do this ourselves? Because not everybody else was agreeing with the direction from the EP that I'd released, because I was still just trying to figure out what the hell I'm doing.
Are you guys still playing those songs live?
Keep on Rising, that's about it.
One or two of them still kind of find their way in every now and then, but I'll throw them back at them, because I've kind of learned, like, you should revisit material sometimes in your life, you know? Like, it's fun, you do it different when you start playing songs, even just from a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun to throw them, because they take on a new thing, and sometimes, you know...
Right.
So I'll just every now and then, just to keep us fresh, just try and make us, hey, let's put this one in the set or something. But
right,
that was definitely what that residency was about too. Was like, let's go through our back catalog and reinvent some of this stuff. And,
yeah,
you know.
So, did you primarily write that first EP?
Yeah, yeah. No, and I'd actually gone into the studio. I recorded at the Cacophony, and it ended up becoming a demo session. But I mean, I recorded with Matt Drenick from Battle Me.
I just did a record with Matt, actually.
Yeah, he just did a record with Matt. And then, Alex Moss from the Black Angels was on it. We had all these people coming in.
Yeah.
And it just, at the end of the day, I was like, this is still not what I'm wanting.
Right, right.
And then we went to Bismo, and we did the EP, you know, and Jonas helped me really do the best we could at that time for that. But we were still, it was still Jonas and I being like, is this good? Is this good? I don't know if it's good. And then finally, when it got to the point when I was showing Jonas some just simple demos of just beat machine, guitar, and good song, we were like, this is good. Yeah. And when nobody else believed us that it was good, we were like, oh, fuck everybody else.
Yeah.
This is good. This is what we do believe in. And the moment you can say that, like, I don't give a shit what you think.
Yeah.
That's the moment you got something. Because then you have the confidence to stand and fight. So that's what we came to finally, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you guys... So you guys, then you wrote Heartbreak Boogaloo together.
Yes, pretty much.
And how does that work? Do you come in with ideas, or do you come in with kind of finished songs, or do you just kind of jam, turn shit on?
It's totally different every time. Every tune's different. There's a couple of songs on there that were complete kind of improv things. That, like, there's a song in there called Can't Wait a Minute that we just... Aaron had his favorite chord change. He likes a 1/6.
He's got me figured out already. He knows...
Oh, like, he'll just go...
You mean like C to A minor?
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of your songs, half of my songs are like that.
Totally, and I always associate that. We talk about that chord change.
But also, time out, half of songs are that change. Yeah.
No, and that's what I tell him. I was like, dude, no, don't worry. That's like, you know, you got to just use the chords. I always just joke, because I'm like, 1/6, I know where the song's going.
I'm a sucker for Buddy Holly. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I can't help it. I can't help it.
And that's, we equate everything to the La Bamba soundtrack of our youth.
Yeah, we do. No, we figured it out, because I was trying to figure out, I was like, why do I love this chord change so much? And I started thinking, you know, you didn't have MTV in San Seba. You didn't have any music stations. You had just country music. So the only way that I got music was from movies.
Right.
So you had La Bamba, you had Eddie and the Cruisers, you had Heartbreak Hotel, you had Great Balls of Fire.
Those are the movies that
those are
out,
good. No.
And it's like, shoot, that's the best stuff.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that is his
stuff. Dark Side's coming, baby, don't you see?
That was the first thing that came to mind.
We can talk
that
about
and
covering
like,
that.
You're working.
We are. We're going to cover Eddie and the Cruisers,
dude. In Skyrocket, we do kind of do it. There's a song that breaks down really low, and when our singer gives me the high sign, I start doing that. Yeah, that's like the Bruce Springsteen piano rip-off.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so...
Anyway.
He comes in with a 1/6.
He came in with that and was just playing it. And I just got behind a drum set and went like, well, let's just do this. So we just recorded, and he did a vocal, and that was the Can't Wait a Minute vocal. And I laughed because he was just like, well, I need to rewrite it. I'm like, yeah, it's good. It sounds great.
Yeah.
So the words make that song. He sings them different every time. It's very, but that's one that was just an improv. And then like a song like Call Me Back on there. That was something I walked in the door as he was kind of writing it. And so I just sat down. he showed me, he was just kind of playing single chords on a
yeah,
piano.
Yeah, my piano was playing like this. And,
you know, he was just like something like
that. And if it's on the Lowry, yeah. I can do the magic chords. So yeah, I just hit one and I'll be like, ding, 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 ding. Still gets the job done.
Totally. No, I left, but I came in the door and he was doing that. And so we just wound up, I pretty much worked out an arrangement on piano with him right then. And I just said, hey, let's add this bridge. And we came up with a bridge together.
Right.
And then, you know, and I worked out a little intro thing, and then we just tracked it right then. And that's that vocal of that song and that deal, that was just kind of tracked right that minute, you know? So
it's just cool because it's like we, you know, at what, 34, 35, we can still be every day together in a band. Like, it still feels band. Yeah, and that's how band writes is like actually, you know, your buddy walks in the door while you're working on a tune, and you're like, oh, let's drop this, record this now.
Yeah.
And you don't hear about this. Like, oh, let me email you the tune and we'll work it out, you know, in LA or New York or wherever.
Right, right.
But it's rare when you could be at this age and still just hang out and still write tunes with your good buddy.
Yeah.
You know, and it works out. I think the workflow's way easier.
I don't think enough people talk about, and just to go aside, is the lifestyle of being in a band.
No.
Like, when I was like 5, I saw the movie Help with the Beatles, and they all live in a house, but their houses are like, their houses are adjoined.
Yeah, yeah, I love
it's
that.
It's like a quadruplex, but like a straight line.
I was wondering Paul's
but you're like, wait, you can just live with your friends, and there's like a guy that has actual like a lawn inside of his house that he mows with like those chopping teeth.
Yeah, the little...
I mean, like, you can totally be like a
band.
Yeah, just... Yeah. 12-year-old.
Yes,
with
exactly.
stuff
yeah.
you buy.
Yeah, you got
and
stuff.
And a car.
Yeah. Because that's all musicians are, is 12-year-olds.
That's
yeah.
Stuff.
That's...
It's the best. But it sells, like, that sort of, like, love and camaraderie between people is, like, it's so appealing, and it's addictive. You know, you don't, like, you know.
You know, it's funny. That was a big split for me. Like, I had a lot of friends, and you know most of my friends that did this, and we all have friends that, like, they either go into this, like, when you get out of being in bands in your early 20s, you either go into being like, oh, I'm a higher up musician guy. If you're
right.
going to keep going.
Right.
And you end up on the road with lots of artists and working and doing that. But that side of it disappears a little when you do that. There's still a fun.
Yeah. No, no, no. I know what you mean.
Like,
yeah.
That was what always prevented me from entering that world really wholeheartedly, because I would take gigs working with people and do that, but I always, even like joining Gaudi when I joined your band when I was a kid, it was like, yeah. I wanted to hang out with you and like write songs, you know?
Right.
Like, that's what I was looking for always, is I'm always more interested in like working with somebody personally.
Right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I feel a disconnection when I was going to hire out land like that.
I have been doing some shows with the band The Bodines, and while that's a very exciting thing, there is a disconnect.
It's a weird thing. It's small, because you still hang out.
It's very small. Yeah, and everyone's
that,
cool. It's just, it's a grown-up job.
Exactly. It's
no,
not
it's
like,
still fun, but it's not like...
You know, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No one brings their cars.
Well, playing. But that's the same thing. So you take it back to the Stroll, so it's like, that's what I realized when I hired out all these musicians to play all these songs I wanted them to play. It was great. But I was paying them to be there.
Yeah.
That's a big difference, man.
Yeah, it's a huge
That's
difference.
A big difference.
Yeah.
Instead of being there like, hey, I think these tracks are badass. I want to write. I want to collab with you. Like,
yeah.
let's go deep together. Let's
yeah.
do this, you know? So there is that energy loss when it's a hire out or somebody that has passion for the project. So I don't want that. I don't need the fake. There's enough fake in the world. I don't want that. So that was what was great. I was like, Jonas is real. He's here. How do we do this together? And then hence, here comes the tape machines.
I mean, that
you know?
Is a huge thing, though. Like, so when you go on tour, I mean, what all do you take on stage at a regular show?
For us?
To a regular Midnight Stroll show.
Now? Oh, gosh. We take, well, we just got these giant racks of these Keel things, and we bring 4 8-10 custom cabs now.
It's like Motorhead.
Like twins and then a synth, and like there's 3-4 tape machines on stage that I have to man, and then there's these some modular synths.
Do you
stuff,
guys have a guy? Is there a...
No, we just do it.
Yeah, he's his
stage.
Own. He's his
I'm
own.
I'm worried
tech.
About you. I think they're making you carry stuff. And, hey, Olga, can you help me do this?
No, we literally we loaded into his Ford Escape, and people laugh.
We could fit. Oh, we could fit our whole show.
We fit this huge, like Kiel custom racks into these things.
It's awesome.
We'll escape.
But it's a way we can do it ourselves, right? We don't need anybody else. We can literally go in there. We don't even need a sound guy.
That's.
We can roll in there and do the whole show. We can play in the friggin' Whataburger parking lot if we want to. We don't give a shit.
Yeah, we actually bring our self-contained sound system at this point too. We can be our own sound system if we have to as well.
But also, we didn't. You see so many days everybody with laptops up on stage. That's great, but it's weak. It's weak. I'm sorry. It's fucking weak.
No. I'm a firm believer in what you guys are doing.
Yeah, like, it's man. Cool. It ain't rock and roll, man.
There's a tactile thing happening.
It's just to make it physical.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine with track-based. I like electronic music. I love that kind of exploration sonically. For me, it's all... growing process. That's what's fun for me right now, is just as an artist, that's what I'm getting to get off on with this project so much, is I keep having to find ways to, like, well, how do I make it feel more like real?
Yeah, rock and roll, man.
How do I make it feel more like I want air pushing? I grew up in My Bloody Valentine lifestyle. Like, I wanted
melt
that.
Your friggin' face. If you're on the front row, I want to melt your face off.
I enjoy that.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Just as much as I enjoy sitting there with an acoustic guitar,
sure,
and us just singing a song and being just voices and that, but it's just about creating a visceral experience, hopefully, that's a little bit more than just like direct.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
You know, it's the age of direct bands. It's a strange thing to stand next to a stage and have no sound moving.
Yeah.
That just weirds me out as an artist, as somebody who played in live bands my whole life. Like, I'm used to not being able to hear the bass player across the stage.
Right, it's funny.
I'm trying to get back to that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard. Is it difficult? I know this is a weird logistical question, but, I mean, you're using these tape machines and stuff and things with moving parts often stop moving.
Oh, yeah, it's happened.
Against your will.
Oh, it's happened, dude. Live, like, in Chicago, we're playing at Shuba's, and either the guitar leaned against the reel or something, and the reel started coming off in the middle of the song, and the song starts like slowing down, and like we're like, what the fuck's going on?
No, but it was great. The audience got so involved because the machine.
Because they see it. It becomes a movie at that point. They're like, yeah, they're like,
this machine's spewing tape off, and our tracks are just like stopping, and it's spewing tape, and Aaron's playing guitar. And he's just trying to keep it going, and so I'm on my knees cranking up all this tape, trying
still,
to slow it and
re-thread. But the crowd's going,
And what was amazing, it was great, because I sat there and I kind of scrubbed, and I find a kick drum, and I'm scrubbing the tape, just, and I finally push play, and it happens to land on the chord Aaron's playing, and we're right in sync.
It was
and
cool.
This was magical and fake, and the audience was so how did you do that? I'm just like,
I don't know.
Never do this in a million years.
That's
again.
Amazing.
Yeah. So we have had fog machines too, are not tape friends. They're not friends of tape machines.
You know, but I heard about a band at ACL that their laptop overheated and they couldn't finish their set.
It's like, come on.
I like seeing a band where like things feel like they're... Even Charlie Watts talked about that. I was watching Crossfire Hurricane the other day, that Stones documentary.
So was I. I'm serious.
Well, you know, Charlie Watts talking about, like, well, you couldn't really hear each other, and you know that this machine, like, I'm playing behind, he's like, it could all fall apart at any moment. And that's part of live music to me. Like, it's supposed to all be able to fall apart.
Oh, right. That's when he's talking about one guy's playing this, the other guy's kind of like... And everything, that's what I like too.
And I live for that. So like, I actually enjoy the stress that I get of all these tape machines moving and all these things with moving parts. Because to me, I'm like, well, cool. I know there's something that can mess up here.
Exactly.
But you know, but here's the kicker though. And this is what Jonas and I have done. And this is what that acoustic show was for us to prove. Is it doesn't matter if all the machines go down. We can pick up the guitar, light a candle, and we'll still knock you dead.
That's
like,
right.
That's bottom line. Like, because the songs are good.
Yeah.
Like, the songs are pop songs at the heart. No, fuck it. They're good. But but like, you know.
They're great songs.
Like, but at the bass level, I can still pick up a guitar and I can play you the dang song.
Yeah.
And that's actually what Jonas taught me. You know, that's what he helped me realize. You know, coming from Ghostland and I mean... I guess I can sing Sad Sad City to you with an acoustic, but other than that, I can't be like, move with your lover.
Yeah.
Just sitting there, you're going to be like, that's great. I'm moving with my lover now. But with these songs, I can actually sit down and play them for you. So if all the machines go down and electricity goes out, I can still do it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of my favorite records is that Alex Chilton live in New York, like by candlelight, electricity by candle moonlight or whatever, 97. It's like this cassette recording of Alex Chilton at the Knitting Factory, and there's a power outage in New York, and so the power goes down, and he's signing, and the show's about to be canceled, and somebody hands him an acoustic, and he plays an hour and a half set on this acoustic.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
And it's recorded, and he's doing like Beach Boys, so he'll do anything but Big Star or Alex Chilton songs, of course.
That's the worst part about that guy. I mean, he's gone. That was the worst part.
Well, that was the worst and the best, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of thing. It's like, he's like, oh, I'll play you some good songs, not mine, but he just like this great Loudon Wainwright song on there.
Oh, really? It's a great artist, but there is something sad about that when that happens. Because you do go to hear a song,
Totally. But, yeah. You know, I live for artists that want to challenge me.
Me too.
I'm fine with, like, you know, what's the joke? I was that the Give Me Danger thing that I was watching the other day with the Jim Jarmusch Iggy Pop movie.
I hate to say this, but I was also watching that. I'm not joking.
Shit. I love it.
Well, I mean, we're right. Everybody's watching what? Everybody's getting at the feeding trough from Netflix and Amazon. We all eating from that same bowl.
No, but it was interesting, you know, they were talking about, I like Joey Ramone being at Stooges shows and saying he was so offended because they didn't play any songs he knew.
Right, right,
right. I kind of love that. Like, you know, I mean, to me, that's, I like forward-moving artists.
Yeah,
of course. I want to show up to, if I go see Tom Petty, I mean, yeah, I would love to see him play The Waiting, but I also want to see him play something that's new and force the audience to listen, like, and I want to see him win me over with it.
Yeah.
You know, take that chance.
Like, you still want somebody to blow your mind, right?
Yeah, of course.
You still want somebody to blow your mind.
Yeah, Bowie was good about that. I mean, what was that Nine Inch Nails tour that they did? He talked about that all the time. Like, Trent Reznor was like, in those memorials, like, you know, I was amazed. He's like, I have David Bowie opening for me. Yeah. He's like, and Bowie is saying, it's going to be rough, Trent. I'm not playing any of my hits.
Right, right.
That's when he got the boots thrown at him.
On this stage, you know? And it's David Bowie, and he's forcing you to listen to his most current material. I think that's, you know, that's what I want to see.
Sounds good, but like the way you said that, like from a consumer standpoint, that sounds terrible.
Well, that's the problem because you're thinking from a consumer standpoint.
You know, that's the thing is, I don't want my artists to be concerned with the consumerism side.
Right, of course.
That's where I sit. Like, I want artists that are not consumer concerned. I mean, I want them to make something they think is great and take the chance that it'll either win me over or not.
Right.
That's what I want from people I like.
It really is. I mean, but that's the weird world we live in now, right? With the way the record business is and everything, it seems like bands have to take over so much of that worry of the consumer part of their mind. They have to worry, is this going to sell? Am I going to be able to sell this? Instead of taking the chances to create art they actually want to do, you're so fucking worried about, is this going to sell? Is this going to happen? Is this going to work? You know?
Yeah.
Yes. If like David Bowie and Prince and like Eno didn't have labels to
they're going to be hacking it out there with everybody else, bro.
It would have been a rough go.
Yeah,
and now we live in a world where, I mean, not that that's bad,
yeah,
but we
totally.
Wouldn't have, we might not have heard them.
You know, yeah. Dude.
You know?
No, but exactly.
I don't think all of aspects of life were easy for a Captain Beefheart.
Hey, here's something I'm gonna come clean right now. I don't think I've ever heard Captain Beefheart.
No, I've heard the name a million times.
I've never sat there and actually listened to Beefheart. Really?
No, I've seen that album cover.
Jonas,
right,
you listen to a lot of stuff.
That's Trauma Scrapbook. Yeah, that's a great one. But you know, like you think about how many. That's the missing link between Tom Waits and Howling Wolf.
Oh, okay.
You know, totally. Like, it's jazz, it's avant-garde, it's really fascinating. You know, you think about him having a high school band with Frank Zappa.
That is fucking nuts.
You know, like, they played their prom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that must have been a trippy.
That would have been a weird-ass prom.
That's insane.
But no, it's fascinating. No, thinking about, you know how small music communities are, and we all watch enough music documentaries now with Netflix, we can learn the little inner troves of all of these histories, but it's amazing when I look at something like that. But, I mean, any great artist, like, you know, Sunhouse did not have it easy.
No.
But thank God Sunhouse did what he did.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, it was, there was no thought of consumerism at a certain point. Consumerism in music is only, is less than 100 years old.
That's right.
And that's a weird thing that people need to remember. Like, that has nothing to do with music.
I want you to know that I bring that, I was watching that the other night too. No, I bring that up in conversations with people because, people that get super heavy about streaming music and not getting paid what they think they should be paid, and I used to get all this for my thing. Namely, even a guy like, I mean, it's on my show, so I don't think I'm speaking ill of him because he's my friend, but Tony Scalzo, like, that guy made so much money off the way, and now that money doesn't come in like it used to.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a lot of other things going on, but a couple of years ago, that had stopped, and it had really ruined his thing, and my whole thing is like there's, it's only, it has only been in the last century that people have become rich and famous in their lifetime.
Yeah.
Off mm-hmm. of
music
and art.
It is interesting. Yeah.
It's weird.
It's like Beethoven was not worried about how many Twitter
followers. No, they weren't worried about, yeah.
No. He just didn't give a shit.
It's true.
I mean, even Iggy Pop, like, that's a dude that we all look at now as this cultural icon. But
nobody had wanted anything to do with
it. But that dude was starving and broke and trying to make money in his, you know, late 40s and 50s, like, start slugging it out. Being Iggy Pop was not an easy thing to be in 1990.
I don't think it ever is. Yeah.
You know, no, it's never an easy thing to be. But somebody asked him the other day, you know, what's it like to make money later in life? And he's just like, that's great. I mean, it's fine, you know? He's just like, but it didn't change. I'm glad it didn't change what I would have done, you know?
Right.
And it's true. Like,
yeah.
There's so much. That's the one thing I'm finding, that as I get a little older every year, I get happy that I'm less concerned with that. I mean, I'm more concerned with it, but I'm less concerned with it at the same time. I'm just realizing that there's so much illusion stuff that surrounds the music business, but I'm not a businessman, so I've never really been concerned with it.
No, and I think that's important, but to keep going and doing shows and stuff and having people.
It's a fine balance, man.
It is a fine balance.
It's a very fine balance. You just don't want to get too much on the other side of that, because then it's just a lot of ass kissing. And my lips get chapped quick. So.
Yeah. That's understandable.
I need a lot of lip balm.
So, speaking of artistic and creating new things, you guys are working on new music for
a new
album?
Yeah. We have like 4 songs left fully track and have a few overdubs left to do, but then we got a new record, a new full length coming out. Yeah.
What have you taken any steps like, oh, we brought in this new kind of thing to it?
It's just more focused sonically. I think it's a,
this is a fully realized record, more or less.
Well, I think that's a big thing for me coming from Heartbreak, just from a production stance and how I was viewing what we were doing. Like, coming from that last record, which was, there's a portion of that stuff that was tracked with some of the band, you know, because it was left over and they were songs that were leading into a direction we were heading. And so there was a moment of disconnect, and I think there's a few tracks I can feel that on, where I feel like that's older and this is where we were. And I think this is, we finally crossed where I was like, okay, I want to make sure there's a theme. But, you know, it's like I go to a lot of art galleries with my wife, and it's like, and we go look at photographers and things like that, and I'm fascinated. I just want to make sure that I'm making full series these days when I make a record, because I think I used to be so prone to white album, like, just
anything.
It's Rocky the Raccoon. Where did that come from?
Exactly. No, exactly. It's like where there's this, it's genreless, it's this.
I'm going to have the EDM song next to the solo acoustic song.
Yes,
totally.
Yes, and
which I'm fine with. I think that's a valid approach, but I think I just, because I've done those,
right,
I just felt like as a producer, I was being very conscious with this batch of tunes that I'm going, I want cohesion and I want to feel like there's an actual series.
And that helps me because mind is.
And so the way I can shape that is really simple. I'm like, well, the song's, we'll keep really simple chord structures. If I find myself starting to try and add certain things, I'm like, no, that's aesthetically wrong. But also just starting songs the same way. I'm like, okay, I'm going to program this record. I'm not going to use live. I'm going to use all this crappy drum machine. And right. I'm going to start with a sequence in there. And I have to write the whole sequence, fills and all, before I even start to commit anything. And then just work quick.
Yeah.
Everything we've been doing lately, it's been like an evening.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm very set on working very fast. I don't want to be...
Don't overthink it. We don't want to make too much...
The only thing that winds up taking a while is like creating physical effects versus using plugins. You know, like when you want to send
out.
That's
the fun part. That's the part that you.
That's the part
that you forget about. Are huge fans of that thing.
Exactly. No, that's, you know, it's funny. I did that. We were talking about that earlier. I did my first. I'm not a remix artist by any means. Like of like, you know, dance remix kind of thing. But I did doing that thing this week. I got asked to do one recently, and it was really a fun experience for me because I just realized my approach is absolutely nothing like anybody else that probably is doing a dance remix for somebody's song these days. I'm just like sitting there, like tapping stuff out through a little guitar amp with like, you know, a beat from my iPhone playing through a guitar amp, you know, like,
oh, really?
Putting that into Click,
cool.
And then like recording that back, and then, okay, I'm going to dump. So this pedal board noise that I'm making to a cassette.
Yeah, I look at him over there, and he's got his pedal board, and he's got it unplugged, and he's going, just hitting the cable, and I'm like, oh, he's tracking that right now. Okay,
that's
cool.
Dude,
that's
good.
But then, you know, then it becomes like, I approach it like it's a resonance record. It's just like, it's all in the edit. Let me just take some colors, and I'm going to extract this thing out of Jeff's song. I'm going to extract this element out. And my approach was less... to try and make it more, it was trying to strip out elements and keep the hooks and elements that they had working within it, you know, but...
And that's a My Jerusalem single.
Yeah.
You didn't say their name.
Oh, yeah, no, I didn't, yeah.
Yeah, and it was funny, he was like, I like this. I'm like, dude, you fucking did a great job at it.
Yeah, I
want to
hear it.
Well, it sounds awesome.
I think I want to do remixes. This is great. This is like,
oh,
why have I not
Jonas,
been doing this?
Jonas Danger Mouse Wilson over here.
That's Jonas Danger Mouse Wilson. So it's going to come out later this year. No dates or anything for the people.
I have no idea. Yeah, like Jeff will do what Jeff does.
No. Your album.
Oh, our album.
I just skipped
finishing it. Yeah. We're finishing it the first 2 weeks of April. We're just going in and finishing, and then we'll put it out as soon as we can because that's the beauty of us doing it ourselves.
And you can release when you want because I remember talking to you after that show at the Mohawk and you're like, yeah, I need to go and put this out tomorrow.
Yeah, we released that
put this
acoustic
out tomorrow.
Record the day after we recorded it. Yeah,
exactly.
The show. Yeah.
That's the age we live in and I don't see why artists don't take advantage of it. I think I'm also not a fan of, maybe I'm just impatient. I mean, I can't say that it serves me well fiscally or anything like that, but I don't like waiting 7 months to release some record for this press buildup that people want to do and labels want to do. That's just, I'm done. I'm past it by that point. I have people that, you know, I need 6 months to do a PR campaign and we'll get this tour and we got to put this out during festival season. When like that kind of thinking's just...
It's hard to be an artist in that. I can't do it. One of the things that was exhausting for me was when we did the last album that we did together. We started the week of Thanksgiving. I remember it was like the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. We recorded the first song of it.
Yeah.
But that was 2007, and then the record came out in like February of 2009.
Dude,
and we had that record finished
by
like March.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like...
That's exhausting.
And I think people are so scared at labels and stuff that because there's so little return there's so little return these days of anything monetized as far as, like, a record selling.
Right.
Your only real bet is sinking and getting, like, that kind of thing. So that's the game for most people these days. I find most labels are just trying to pitch their artists into movie singles and stuff, which is great. That we need that stuff, but, you know...
You also, you guys also have a tremendous resource that other people don't. Is your producers, you're the songwriters. You have the studio, which is Skeleton Farm Studio.
Yeah. I think any kid with a laptop's got that resource if they really want to take advantage of it. I mean, I've heard people blow my minds with an inbox. I have a certain amount of gear and things like that, and just a certain amount of experience making records because I've done it for a long time now, but I would tell any 18-year-old, you're crazy if you're going to pay this much for this record or this thing. Just go in there and figure it out and start learning how to do that, because take control of that now.
It seems that they forget the work ethic.
I mean, one of my favorite records is that one you did by yourself. You know,
thank you.
Like, that's one of my favorite, like...
Boy in a Box, available on Spotify and iTunes.
No, that's a great record. But
anybody want to pick it up right now? Go get it.
No, but that is a spirit that you and I, that's a place where you and I both come from.
I think we both come from that era of indie rock, too. Yeah. Like, it's just like, I was listening to Guided by Voices, or going to see even like a band that I'm not even a giant fan of at this point. Definitely like their early stuff much more, was like a Death Cab for Cutie. Like, I remember reading, because I read Tape Op was new, and I read a Chris Walla article that talking about recording those records on a little quarter-inch 8-track in his basement. And they blew my mind.
Yeah.
And that was the thing, is it was like, how do you do that? And now I realize, oh, they wrote really good stuff. That's how they did it. You know?
songs were good.
It was recorded how it was, but the song was really good.
Well, and I don't know if it ever happened to you, but I had those sensibilities coming from 4-track as a teenager. And I worked in, I mean, I got to record in studios too, but nothing was as gratifying or as exciting to me as what I was doing in these 4-track worlds. But then when I would get with the studio people and like the producer people, they were like, oh, this is terrible.
Well, because their ears were in that world. It wasn't in your world, you know?
No, I mean, I've had engineers, I'm not going to drop names, like stop a guitar track because they're just like, something about the resistors in this. And this particular Neve is just not working for me. And I'm like, dude, I was just killing it.
Yeah.
And you just blew a guitar take for that. And now you want to take 20 minutes and do this. And that's absolutely silly. Like, the kid that records it with a 57 through his inbox on his laptop, or probably on his little iRig on his phone.
Yeah.
If you catch the moment, that's really what that is.
Yeah.
You're capturing people playing. It's just, deal
with
it.
The song and the vibe, man.
Mm-hmm.
Any sound can work.
Yeah. That's a great, that was a great quote.
That is.
Jonas. Any sound can work. Jonas Danger Mouse Wilson. So you're going to tour some this year?
Yes.
Yeah, dude. We're working it. We're working our angles. We're getting out there.
It looks like we'll be doing some like Denver and some other places coming up in May. And we're trying to spread it out, obviously, you know. Family lives and those things. But
two bands, because Ghostland's got some shows coming up. Yeah. So
do you guys have a big festival summertime? Is that when you guys
Ghostland?
Your thing? Yeah.
Yeah, man. We, you know, whatever comes at us, you know.
Yeah.
We are truly ghosts. We do disappear completely and then appear when it's time. So yeah, festival circuits, and then we do, you know, we do the big Whitewater thing every year. Okay. We have our big Halloween show in Dallas.
Yeah.
Colorado. You know,
just red rocks,
and then
red rocks.
Yeah,
that's all.
And then we just, no, you know, whoop. We hit our places.
Yeah,
you know, and do our thing. But definitely, right now, it's like, man, my focus is just getting the stroll going.
Yeah,
just getting us out there. I want to go tour. I want to go play. I want to get these songs out there.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I look forward to it. Everyone can find you guys at themidnightstroll.com. You can go on Bandcamp and find. All three of the Heartbreak Boogaloo, Mohawk Boogaloo, which is acoustic, and Alt Boogaloo Live at Skeleton Farm.
Yeah, bunch of boogaloos.
It was
all
a bunch
off
of
one record, right? Three records off of one record?
Yeah.
That's squeezing it, baby.
That's how you do it, man. But it's interesting because, I mean, you're keeping releases going out, and although you don't want to focus on the consumerism side of it, the only way that you can really be heard now is to have a steady stream of shit coming
out. Create the product.
And you're doing that. But you're not doing it because
we're
of
doing
the
it on
consumerism.
Our terms.
You're doing it because you have a burning sensation to make and put something
totally.
In this earth that was not there before you made
exactly.
it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. No. And that's the thing. And that's something he really, you know, helped turn me on to is pushing those different angles of being like, no, let's do this version of these songs. Let's do these versions. And I think people are enjoying them.
How was the Neil Fest before we go? I
Dude,
wanted to talk
awesome.
To you about that.
Neil Fest, I think, did more for our career than in one day than anything.
Well, when you're
no,
on the bill
it was just
like Nora
with,
Jones
dude,
and
well, yeah. Boz Skaggs came
Boz
up to
Skaggs.
Jonas and was like, "Good guitar lick, man."
No way.
And Jonas is like, "Boz Skaggs just told me good guitar." And then like seeing Joe Ely and like, you know, hanging out with Butch Hancock and just all these like like people that freaking have knowledge, you know, people watching that have been through it, you know, and then just like,
do you get that feeling like, oh my God, what are we, they're going to find out.
No, honestly.
We're going to get discovered.
No. Well, yeah.
You know
what
I mean? Like, we're going to get discovered as like hacks. We're not.
Yeah. You know, well, it's just, it was cool because you're talking to them and I had this great conversation with Butch Hancock and he was just like having a moment and he was stepping back and he was just like, you could tell he was just really having a moment. And he was just like, man, you're on the ride now. He's like, you're on the ride. And he's like, hang on. He's like, it goes fast. He's like in his 70s.
Yeah.
And he's sitting there being like, dude, it was just yesterday. We were just starting starting the Flatlanders, you know? And you could tell he just kept stepping back. He's like, man, what a weird world. Yeah. And for me, I'm just like, just that wisdom to just to know you like you're still on the ride. There's ups and downs, there's peaks and there's valleys, and it's just like, man, right on, you know. So it was cool.
Oh, totally.
All on our way to being those dudes. Like we were the kids at one point.
That's what I find is that's where I'm in. Is I'm like I'm not. It's interesting to not be the kid in the room. Like now I'm like that dude that people are like, oh, that dude's you know.
Oh, that old dude.
That old dude. He's been around forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Jonas has stories.
Yeah.
Jonas has scars.
You guys, you guys did some shows here during South by Southwest.
We got some coming up this weekend, actually, on Saturday.
Oh, really? Oh, this is coming out on Tuesday.
Oh.
Sorry.
Well, there you go.
But you're going to be playing more. People can find out. You're doing a show. I saw there's one on the books in May at the Mohawk.
No, we got April 28th, or is it 29th? At the Hotel Vegas.
There's one in Vegas.
May 29th at Hotel Vegas is what it said.
April 29th.
Oh, really?
Yeah, April 29th.
Might want to fix that.
And then we're doing this Saturday at Mohawk at 3, though. That's a free-for-all party, so I know nobody's going to hear this except for the people sitting out here.
No, but maybe someone that's listening to it. Thank you guys for
thanks for coming. Yeah.
Thanks for coming. Ray Segrin,
nice to talk to other
radio
people.
Radio legend. Old friend.
But yeah, we're doing that, and then we're doing an in-studio thing at Arlen on Saturday, too. That'll be...
Oh, nice.
Which is weird. You know, that's the first place I recorded, so I laughed that Arlen's treated like this new thing. It's like, my first studio experience... Well, my first studio experience was Congress House.
Right.
With Mark Holman.
Mine,
and
too.
And then my second studio experience was Arlen with Roscoe Beck playing bass.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, Roscoe.
I met a guy that's a young guy that Roscoe Beck played bass on his record.
Oh,
recently,
man.
Is that what they do?
I guess that's what
sticking you in there with Roscoe and JJ.
Well, see how you
totally play the blues, kid.
That's kind of what it was. No, it was, but JJ was with George Reef actually. George Reef, JJ, and Andrew Duplantis all played on my second batch of my recordings. That was what was Stuart Sullivan's room, which is now in its third incarnation at the Mosaic Sound Collection.
Oh yeah, yeah.
How weird is that? Which is the father of my students that runs that place, you know.
Oh,
like
really?
Dan Redmond, residual kid students who are signed to Sire.
Right, right. Yeah.
So like,
oh, yeah, it's Dan's place. Right. Or Dan's idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's all, like, it's so weird, those connections that of, like, weird things, like teaching that guy's kids for 10 years. So, like I said, we're now on Sire and, you know, on tour with Dinosaur Jr. and stuff, which is weird to me that Dinosaur Jr. exists again.
Yeah, that's
like,
weird,
you know, the whole...
Yeah.
Like, I remember... handing those kids Sonic Youth records, and they covered... Jay Maskus produced them covering 100%, which I taught them in a room, like, which is the first song on Dirty by Sonic Youth.
Right.
And I'm just like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
Like, Jay Maskus is producing me just showing these kids, like, heroes of me that I thought was, like, long dead music, like Sonic Youth. I thought that was, like, to a kid that age, I'm like... Yeah, you know, Sonic Youth was around, but, like, you know, talking about a Dinosaur Jr. or something, or My Bloody Valentine to those guys. And then all of a sudden, My Bloody Valentine's this huge revival entity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you would have told me that when I met you, like, that there'd be a third big star performance going on tomorrow, as you were driving around playing me, like, Big Black Car on tour, and I'm like, this is amazing, Kangaroo, oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
Just to think, like, and, you know... And the Posies bass player, Matt, play on your record, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I had no idea what, like, music's so small. It's so weird. It freaks me out these days.
Like, it's a freaky thing, man.
That's what's weird about not being a kid anymore, is I'm realized, like, you know, when I'm talking to, like, I wake up one morning in my house and I'm playing on a piano, Instant Karma, and, like, B.P. Fallon emerges from my bedroom going, like,
yeah,
you know, he hasn't slept all night, just been sitting there and just like walks out going Jonas. Like, he's like, oh, Jonas, yes, that was interesting. And then I realized, oh, that dude's playing miming bass on Top of the Pops on this song.
Yeah, the dude
that just walked out of my, like, you know, I was having coffee in my living room.
Yeah.
And you just realize, like,
it's world's full of resurrections.
Is he here this year?
No, he's not here this year.
It's weird. It's kind of like it's not. I've been looking for pictures of him. Yeah.
Beep, if you listen, I'll finish your echo on Monday.
All that boogaloo.
Yeah, and all that boogaloo.
Oh, he gets on me about us misspelling boogaloo.
Yeah, in my notes, I had to scratch it out and put a U in there because I spell it the Bolin way.
We're like, well, no, exactly.
Yeah,
he's
see,
like,
I had to put the U over the two O's.
I did get that from Bolin, by the way, but I didn't get the spelling from him.
No.
We Googled the spelling and we saw a pronunciation and a spelling of it that way. So we liked that spelling and we liked what that definition said. So
this is what's wrong with your age. This is the difference in our ages.
Why?
I'm 13 years older than you guys. Uh-huh. And the difference is I used to watch a show called The Bugaloos, which was probably not on when you were a kid, but they spell it like this. So when I see your spelling, I think Bugaloo.
Yeah, gotcha. And everybody does, because that would be how you pronounce it, which is funny, but I just told, you know, I'm like, well, part of rock and roll is reinventing language, you know?
Yeah.
I failed spelling, so it doesn't matter.
So it's funny.
You don't need to spell, man. You can sing.
Spell it how you want.
Yeah.
That's pop culture. It's, you know, slang. Nobody will be talking normal. And
everyone get out there. Go to themidnightstroll.com. Go to the Bandcamp. Pick up all of this music. Thank you guys, for coming out. Thank you to South by Southwest and TuneIn and Caleb for recording. You can find How Did I Get Here on TuneIn. You can find it on Stitcher. You can find it on iTunes, all the other places where you find it. But we are on TuneIn. So if that's how you listen to your jams, listen to us there. All right? Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Aaron and Jonas from The Midnight Stroll. Everyone get out there and talk to those guys. Check them out. If you want a sticker, just find me. Yeah. Aaron Behrens, Jonas Wilson from The Midnight Stroll, live at the TuneIn South by Southwest podcast stage. That was a great time. I want to thank Jonas and Aaron for coming out and for making such great music. Get out there and find them at themidnightstroll.com. Get involved, pick up their music, go see them live. Fantastic band. I want to thank TuneIn and South by Southwest for being so cool. And thank you for listening to the show. All right. I hope that you guys, if you were at South by Southwest, you guys all had a great South by Southwest. I hope you guys all have a great week. Thank you for listening to the show. Let's hear a tune from a Mohawk Boogaloo, right? Yeah, a little bit from The Midnight Stroll. Have a great week, you guys.
All right, we're going to do a Keep on Rising. I'm gonna keep on rising, I'm gonna keep on hoping on. My horse is getting thirsty, my heart is telling me to roam. I'm trying and I'm trying and I'm trying and I'm trying to see. I'm gonna keep on going on. My soul is getting restless. It's out until the break of dawn. I'm trying and I'm trying and I'm trying and I'm trying to see.
Thank you.